and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
When I ran for office, I promised to tell people the truth.
And that I would. The mayor reverses a campaign pledge and proposes a property tax hike to avoid cuts to services. As former President Obama stumps for Harris, a look at the impact black men could have in next week's election. And why advocates are calling the lack of funding in early childhood services in Illinois a crisis. First off tonight, Mayor Brandon Johnson is calling for a $300 million property tax hike, saying he had no choice but to break one of his central campaign promises in order to avoid cuts to services and thousands of layoffs. Here's what Johnson told older people this morning at City Hall about his $17 billion spending plan.
This is tough. It is. It is something that I grappled with for weeks and weeks. We didn't make this decision lightly. I would certainly much rather tax the rich.
WTTW News reporter Heather Sharon joins us now from City Hall with more on the proposed tax hike. Heather, Johnson said the property tax increase, which would be the biggest since 2016, is necessary to close that $982.3 million budget shortfall. What would it mean for Chicagoans?
Well, if you own a home worth about $250,000, it will likely mean that your property tax bill will increase between $220 and $240 a year. Now, that is on top of any increase in the value of your property, and that is all underway by the Cook County Assessor's Office. So this could have a big impact on Chicagoans who have been struggling to stay in their homes amid rising property values. It is also, as you said, the largest property tax increase in nearly a decade, and it comes on the heels of a pretty significant increase over the years, with Chicagoans paying a significant amount more in property taxes to fund the city's basic services such as police, fire, and garbage pickup.
Heather, how else does Johnson propose closing that gap?
Well, as mayors have done in the past, he relies on a pool of funds dedicated to fighting blight across the city. The city's tax increment financing districts, he says, has $570 million in surplus funds that ongoing projects don't need. So he declared those to be in surplus, sending about $130 million to the city and $330 million to the Chicago Public Schools. Now, we've talked a lot about that agency's financial crisis. That will help the schools make a required pension payment of about $175 million, but it is not enough to potentially avoid having to borrow or make cuts to the district's operations. They still don't know how they would pay for a new contract for teachers and principals, leaving a lot of unknown questions this evening.
Yeah, a lot of questions, Heather. So the mayor's spending plan, it also proposes making that additional payment to the city's four pension funds, but why not cancel that payment and then maybe avoid the need for that property tax hike?
Well, that is what a lot of older people are asking tonight. In all, the city will pay more than $2.8 billion into its four pension funds, which are all woefully underfunded. The mayor fiercely defended this proposal, saying that if the city does not make this additional payment, the city will have to pay billions more over the next several years, and it will threaten the safety and security of the pensions that thousands of former city employees rely on to pay their bills now that they're no longer working. That is going to be the subject of a good deal of controversy during the upcoming hearings, because if the city did not make that additional payment, they could cancel the property tax increase, but it could also potentially mean that it would cost the city more to borrow money if Wall Street rating agencies lower the city's credit rating.
All right, no easy answers there. Heather Sharon at City Hall for us, thank you. And you can read Heather's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. And now to some more of today's top stories. Election Day is next Tuesday, and if you're planning on voting day of, there is a new resource available if you have trouble at the polls. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Chicago is announcing a telephone hotline to receive complaints related to the voting process, like discrimination, intimidation, threats of violence directed at poll workers or election officials, and election fraud. You can find the hotline numbers on our website. And while you're there, be sure to check out our voter toolbox. It has the information that you need to know ahead of casting your ballot, including which offices are up for election. You can find that at WTTW.com/voter guide. While police are still investigating whether the shooting of an Orthodox Jewish man over the weekend should be charged as a hate crime, the state is rolling out a new service to report acts of hate.
When you report online or call, the Help Stop Hate team will connect you with resources and supports tailored to your experience, your identity or community, and where you live. Your reports will also help prevent the escalation of hate in the future.
Officials today launched Help Stop Hate, a statewide service allowing people to report a hate act they've experienced or witnessed. The state says it is not affiliated with law enforcement and the reports can be made anonymously. Officials say they'll collect data from the reports made either online or by phone to better understand what communities are experiencing acts of hate and to funnel resources to those areas. The FBI says hate crimes reached an all-time high in 2023, with nearly 12,000 incidents reported. A new report says Illinois gun laws are among the strictest in the nation, but that hasn't led to reduced violence in Chicago.
Gun possession accounts for a massive portion of gun-based incarceration in the county. Incarceration on discharge or gun deliveries is anywhere from tiny to tiny to really infinitesimal. Our criminal legal system is awash in gun possession cases, and that strategy has failed to keep us safe.
Cook County Public Defender Sharon Mitchell joining the Chicago Appleseed Center for Fair Courts in announcing their new report analyzing policies that have led to the so-called hypercriminalization of gun possession. The data says while arrests for gun possession in Chicago have increased from 2% to more than 10% of all arrests in the last 20 years, the number of injuries and deaths by guns has not decreased. The group also says Black and Latino communities are twice victimized, as both impacted by gun violence and also criminalized for gun possession. At 97 years young, the founder of Johnson Products Company thinks maybe it's finally time to write that memoir. George E. Johnson founded the company, which was the first Black-owned company to be listed on the American Stock Exchange, and of course is the maker of Ultra Sheen and Afro Sheen hair products. Johnson Products was also the financial sponsor of the musical variety show Soul Train. The memoir, titled Afro Sheen, How I Revolutionized an Industry with the Golden Rule from Soul Train to Wall Street, is co-written with author Hillary Beard and is set to be released in February. Up next, one key group that could help tip the election right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
New polling shows Black men might be shifting their attitudes about who to vote for next week's presidential election, just 6 days away, in case you haven't heard. The Black male vote has turned into a crucial block this election, with both Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump making an appeal to get their votes. Here to talk more about what's at stake are Gary Gardner, co-founder of the We Gotta Vote billboard campaign, and Devin Jones, Republican committeeman of the 18th Ward and chairman of the Southside Republicans. Thank you both for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
So first, I want to know, why do you think the Black male vote has become such a deciding factor in this electoral cycle? Gary, I'll start with you, please.
Well, I'm not sure it's the Black male vote as much as it is young generational differences. I think all young people, back in April, when we heard the pundits and the journalists saying that Black men weren't going to vote in November, I think they were talking really about all young men that just felt disenfranchised, that their choices were going to be two 80-year-olds. And was that democracy? It certainly didn't feel like it to me. So I think I understood their frustration. I rub shoulders with young Black men every day. So I really didn't hear that sentiment that they weren't going to vote. They weren't going to allow the Democratic Party to take their votes for granted. They had to earn their vote. And I think that maybe the Democrats were slow to do that, to realize that. But I think that Kamala has certainly come up to speed and has made, a really credible, strong case to black men. And we will turn up next week.
Devin, same question to you.
Yeah, I would agree with what you said. Also, because we've seen such a seismic shift in where people are voting, no one seems to be hard aligned to anyone right now, especially black people. You see people going to City Hall, you know, saying Chicago's going red, black Chicago's going red. So I think that's and that has been the case nationwide. And I think that's why you're seeing a hyper focus on black men, black women, and even on other groups, young people. I'm a millennial myself, so we are all over the place with who we're supporting. So I think that people are done with the old alignments and allowing political parties to take advantage of them.
Gary, you and your wife, you started the Billboard campaign, We Got a Vote, in the spring. In a world that has gone digital, why did you choose this tactic to reach out to the younger voters that we're talking about?
Yeah, well, I think there's plenty of people in the program, in the party that are doing the digital campaigns, but we're old school. And what we knew we had to do was to do a couple things. One, to reach out to black men, to give them an invitation. We think that the Billboard campaign not only identified them, but got a chance to celebrate them. These guys are seeing themselves. We picked up the Spike Lee, you know, logo. She's got to have it. So it was kind of a cute logo and slogan. We hope that not voting is not an option, becomes a mandate. And then my wife came up with, we can't go back 4 months ago. And the Democratic convention, you know, they picked it up. I guess great minds all think alike. But making it a billboard makes it a celebration of these guys. We knew that we had to do images. And so we have three different images, and we hope that at least half of the population of young men see themselves in one of those. Right. But more importantly,
of young black men
young
on
black
billboard,
men.
Hoping that will appeal to them.
But more importantly, their families see them and celebrate them.
Devin, last time you joined us, you said that one of the most concerning issues for black men was were financial issues, lack of economic growth among the community. Since then, Vice President Harris has come out with her opportunity agenda for black men. Do you think that addresses your concerns at all?
I don't think so. I think that many of us feel like if it was going to be done, it would have already been done or rolled out sooner. So I think people are still looking at other options. And again, you know, it's not just Vice President Harris, it's an entire apparatus on one side or the other that people are looking to break. And so, again, that's why you're seeing this shift of a sizable minority of people who are looking at other options.
So yesterday, Harris did an interview with radio host Charlamagne Tha God, and they asked her to speak on the topic of whether black men are supporting her. Here's a listen.
I was just at the barbershop in Philly talking with very incredible and distinguished men who are leaders in their community in small business and education. And these men, these black men, were talking about not only their support for me, but most importantly, their support for my perspective on what we can do that lifts up the community and taps into the ambitions and the aspirations.
Gary, do you think her messaging these last few weeks has reached the voters that she needs to reach?
I think she's really come on strong. I'm really excited about the 3 million new homes being built. Not only will that bring the supply, will bring the cost of housing down, but if done right, it really will be a great opportunity for black men to become literally building the homes of their community.
A recent NAACP poll, as we mentioned, found that the likelihood that black men under 50 years old will vote for Trump has decreased from 27% to 21%, and the likelihood for Harris has increased from 51% to 59%. Now, I think we've all questioned the validity of our polls in recent years. But Devin, what do you make of this? What do you think that is?
You know, I think I would want to see what questions were asked. I haven't seen the science behind this or what they actually asked. I don't think that as I have talked to people on the ground at Vice President Harris goes to barbershops, I go to barbershops, I go to different places, and there's a sizable minority of black men who are not voting for her, you know, and so whether it's 21% or 29%, that's still a significant amount of people that are rejecting.
What are the policies of Trump's that you think will be helpful for black men, the black community, and what attracts them to him?
I think people trust his economic policies, those that are voting for him, trust his economic policies because of what they saw in his 4 years as president. People saw more money in their pocket. They saw the ability to be able to afford things like gas for their cars, utilities in their homes, groceries, basic things. And we have not seen that under the last 3.5, almost 4 years.
Gary, your slogan states, not voting is not an option. It's on the bottom part of your T-shirt. But there are some folks who might still be planning to withhold. Maybe they are just not comfortable with either of these candidates. What do you say to them?
We've got to change that. You know, we have got to understand that voting gives us a place, as I said, at the table, not only here in the national election, but really in the local elections, where we look up and find out that state legislatures have given our rights away, have restricted our children. So hopefully this is just the beginning, and it has to be a mandate, and I hope this becomes a legacy and not just a campaign slogan.
We know that the race has been extremely tight. We've just got a few seconds left, Gary, but what do you think it is that's holding her back from being able to tip this election in her favor?
I think she's got it. I think that our guys didn't want to be taken for granted, but once they get in the booth, and this campaign, everyone's campaigning to get them in the booth, there's no choice. There's only one choice.
Only one choice. You know, both candidates gave their final pitches last night. What would you like to hear from them? Devin, you first.
You know, I think this is it. You know, we've heard all that we can hear. Now it's up to us to take whose values we align with and actually vote. And I think people are taking this very seriously this time.
Okay, I think so. That's a good place to leave it. Good luck next week, gentlemen. If you haven't already voted, Gary Gardner and Devin Jones, appreciate you. Up next, calls for Illinois to step up its funding for the state's youngest. Stay with us. Babies can't wait, and neither can Illinois families, according to the nonprofit Start Early. That group is launching a campaign that aims to draw attention to the gaps in early childhood development services. Advocates are calling on Governor J.B. Pritzker to increase early intervention funding by $60 million to tackle staffing shortages and delays in treatment. Joining us now with more are Karen Berman, Senior Director at Start Early, and Jacqueline Vasquez, parent and advocate. Thanks to you both for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you
for
having
us.
So, Karen Berman, first, if you would, tell us, you know, about the importance of those early years, that 0 to 3 in a child's life.
Well, the first 3 years of life are when we see the most opportunity for development. It's when the brain is in its highest developmental period. In fact, 80% of development occurs during those years. So understanding when there's concerns and intervening as early as possible is critical to having the best outcomes for success in school and in life.
Jacqueline Vasquez, I understand you benefited from using early intervention for several of your children when they were little. How were they helpful for you and your family?
So out of 4 children, 3 received early intervention services. And the earlier we start with intervention, the least amount of interventions we need to apply later in life. My oldest is now 10, and he is doing wonderful. He had low muscle tone head to toe. and I had twins in the pandemic. One of my girls is ventilator dependent and with a trach and a G-tube. So we received all of the various services between developmental, physical. We had occupational, nutrition, vision, orientation and mobility. And with all of them, we had when we applied for services, unfortunately, during the pandemic, we were unable to get all of them to come into our home. So we had to make the concession to have services via Zoom. And my background is that of an early childhood special education educator. So I was able to...
So you were very familiar with where to look and how to make all that come together. Can you imagine for parents who don't have that knowledge, who don't know where to go?
Absolutely. And I'm also knowledgeable about systems and how to navigate these systems. So I applied all of my background knowledge into supporting my children to be successful for potential... to meeting their potential optimal life outcomes.
And I imagine, pandemic or not, to have that many therapists, because full disclosure, my family has employed earlier intervention as well, to have those services coming into the home, especially to help with such little people, I can imagine that makes a big difference.
Huge. We only had one provider able to come into our home at that point, but with the time that they spent with us, we were able to take that knowledge via Zoom or in person and apply it all day, every day through play to help my child who was unable to walk, crawl, walk. She's now dancing, jumping, running, and in school in a blended classroom with her twin sister.
Okay, so a lot of difference it made for
huge
you and your
difference.
Family there. So you all, Karen, have launched the Babies Can't Wait campaign to draw attention to the increased need for funding. One of the challenges that you all draw attention to is that EI providers are leaving, and you report that since 2019, nearly 500 have left the state. What is causing that?
So unfortunately, we've had many years of compensation neglect for this workforce. It's important to know that these providers are speech therapists, occupational therapists, physical therapists, developmental therapists. Many have advanced degrees, and there has been research done now in the state in order to fix this problem, showing that these providers really need a 50% rate increase in order to pay them a competitive and really livable wage. It's also important for people to know that these providers are traveling and coming into homes. The way early intervention works is it's a support for the child, but it's also a support for the family. It's really important to do these interventions in the context of family. Of a child's routines. And so these providers are not paid for missed appointments, for transportation, they don't have health benefits. So the rate that we provide them needs to cover all of those expenses. Right now, they're only getting able to bill for one of every 3 hours they work.
So if they're leaving the state, what does that mean for families and for children who need their services?
Well, that's what's leading to the historically high waiting list. We have double the waiting list than we have ever had since 2021, since before the pandemic. Some are leaving the state, but honestly, many are leaving just to go work in schools or in hospitals or in private clinics where they can get paid a much higher wage. It's also important for people to know that early intervention is a program under the federal law. Families are legally entitled to receive these services, and that's because the research is so clear on both the importance of these services for developmental outcomes, but also the cost savings that states achieve when they deliver these services as early as possible.
Of course, we know you all are having rallies across the state to bring attention to this issue, including one Friday in Chicago. What are you calling for?
So our rally in Chicago on Friday is at 11:30. It's at the corner of Adams and Dearborn, where the Federal Plaza is. We hope many, many people will join us there. And we are calling for that extra $60 million in funding for early intervention and really a commitment to increase the funding over the next few years in order to get to that level of funding that is necessary to get these families off of waiting lists for this help.
Okay. 10 seconds, go on.
I think it's really important that families understand that this is a rights issue. Our children deserve this. They deserve to have every possible support from the very earliest moments of their life to help create these beautiful success stories. We need to
and
not
like
only
you said,
succeed.
If we don't apply this support right now, they'll need greater supports later on as they get older. We'll have to leave it there. I know it's a big issue, yeah. Very important. Karen Berman, Jacqueline Vasquez, thank you so much for joining
us.
Thank you for having us.
And that is our show for this Wednesday night. Election day is less than a week away. As we've mentioned, check out our voter guide before you cast your ballot. We've got information on candidates running for Congress, state's attorney, Board of Education, very important, and much more. Head to WTTW.com/voter guide to check it out. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Are demeaning comments made about Puerto Rico moving the dial with voters? A look at Harris and Trump's last-ditch efforts to sway Latino voters. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to recognize its 20 attorneys recognized in the 2025 edition of the Best Lawyers in America.